sir. Were you appointed counsel?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. For your good fine work on your behalf of your client. That case will be taken under advisement, and we'll move to the next case. It says Robert Brown versus Piers Rosebud.
May it please the court. My name is Ron Wachikowski, and I represent the plaintiff appellants on this matter. The plaintiffs were employees in a business that sold, furnished, and installed Sears home improvements. They specifically installed Sears home improvements in the areas of roofing, fencing, guttering, and doors. This suit seeks to recover compensation for their work.
Let me just ask you this. I gathered from the brief that the record will not tell us very much about the three named plaintiffs and their interaction with Sears. So on this record, the question before us is an all or nothing at all question, isn't it? In other words, either all 1,500 of Diamond's workers were Sears employees or they were not Sears employees.
I think on this record, Your Honor, it's a question of whether there is sufficient evidence from which a jury might determine that the three employees who are named were subject to the control of Sears.
So are you conceding then, in keeping with what Judge Rovner is saying, that there might have been some employees of Diamond who were not under the control of Sears?
I think if you go to a trial...
No, I'm asking right now...
No, on this record, I believe all of the employees
so
would
the
be entitled gathers, to a trial.
The secretaries, the bookkeepers...
That's correct, Your Honor. And let me explain to you why. Because on this record, Sears' involvement in controlling Diamond Services is one that is sufficient to suggest that they control the activities of all employees.
But what's the difference? Your opponents make an analogy to the law of franchising, and I think if you were to take a look at, let's say, the manual that McDonald's franchisees are required to abide by, or that which, you know, Domino's Pizza or whoever the franchisees are, they're similarly detailed. I mean, Sears, of course, has its name associated with this work and a valid business interest in how well it's done. Why, it seems to me that you are essentially arguing that there's no distinction between the license or franchise form of doing business and the employment form.
There are, I think, at least six facts here that demonstrate the situation is critically different from the routine franchise situation. The first fact, Your Honor, is the affidavit of Michael Birchfield, where as the vice president for marketing of Diamond, he says that the way this relationship progressed, I, in essence, became supervised by the manager of Sears Home Central on a daily basis. He was my supervisor. He gave me direction. He set my deadlines. He assigned my daily work. The vice president of marketing.
Why does that make these plaintiffs Sears employees?
It's kind of in the same way that ultimately when a private in the Army is under the direction of colonels or generals, and the colonels or general set the direction of what's going to happen with that army. The privates themselves are subject to that same control. If the general in that chain of command is from Sears, and here, in fact, there's testimony that the chief operating officer of this company during the time in question was a person directed to be employed by Diamond by Sears, coming directly from Sears 4 months before Sears terminated this contract. The vice president is taking his supervision from Sears. Within the chain of command, those under him are also subject to that control. All employees under the supervision or within that chain of command would be subject to that control.
Whatever input Sears may have had on the termination decision, doesn't the evidence tell us that Diamond had the exclusive power to hire, fire, reassign its employees, and that Diamond didn't always follow Sears' recommendations? You can't normally do that, can you?
First of all, under the contract, under the terms of the contract, that right was given to Diamond. As a practical reality, that was not the way the relationship carried itself out. Mr. Birchfield explains in his affidavit how Sears would, in essence, tell them these are people that you need to get rid of. And they'd either get rid of them or they'd lose their license or their markets.
Now, those are, I assume, people actually out on site doing certain work?
The people that would recommend that they would be fired?
I guess because they weren't doing work up hard?
There were people who were not performing in accordance with Sears expectations, and they were concerned about it.
In the end product, putting on the roof or installing fence or whatever it was?
Or whatever it was, or getting the sufficient amount of business in a particular market that they were anticipating for particular managers, for example, within regional offices of Diamond. Sears might be dissatisfied with that. They might think there are too many complaints.
Now, these are focused on these three people.
I'm sorry?
Going back to the original question, you focus, you take the three plaintiffs, but it emanates out into everybody somehow or other. Some who may be performing well, some who may never. And I have to assume that Diamond has different market pockets, et cetera, some that might have been doing well and Sears left them alone, mm-hmm. others that may have been not doing so well and Sears got more involved.
Yeah, well, Sears was monitoring all of the employees' efforts on a daily basis by virtue of surveys of every customer who had any contact with a Diamond employee, by virtue of inspections of every roof that was ever installed and requiring reporting on that, by virtue of daily phone calls, and this is in the record, by virtue of daily phone calls by which they monitored and discussed with the Diamond managers the performance of the Diamond employees. This is not your typical franchise situation. Not only Mr. Birchfield and the chief operating officer are being controlled by Sears, but the vice president in charge of installation says on a daily basis, I'm required to respond to calls from Sears corporate headquarters about Sears requirements.
Was that the only contractor doing this sort of work? Maybe exclusive roofers and fencers and whatever?
Within each of the geographic markets that they were given by Sears, they had the exclusive authority during the time period from 93 to January of 2000.
What was the geographic market for these plaintiffs?
Well, each of the three plaintiffs lived in Illinois. Their specific jobs and responsibilities are not of record. What is a record is that the persons within the chain of command at Diamond certify and explain the circumstances, which I believe establish that Sears had sufficient control of the Diamond operations and of the Diamond employees, all of them, to raise an issue for a jury trial. And I might note that this is submitted by these three plaintiffs on behalf of everybody similarly situated.
But no, you haven't had a class action ruling yet, and this is a 54B appeal.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I don't see the class certification issue as encompassed within this appeal.
This class certification is not a part of this appeal, Your Honor.
So it's not on behalf of everybody. This appeal is about these three people. No one else is prejudiced, by the way. I mean, if they aren't part of a certified class, then nothing has happened to address their rights. But I don't understand this appeal under 54B to be anything but these three people.
It does involve these three people if the court limits its ruling solely as to the absence of evidence as to these three people, and it doesn't affect anyone else. But we think the evidence is sufficient so that this court should render its ruling to say that there is a question for trial as to all of the employees because of the very special facts that show it different from the typical franchise situation. I see my time has expired.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, I lost my card. I should
know. Good morning. May it please the court, Jim Schrader representing Sears in this case. Your honors were correct in your questions. This is a three plaintiff case, and this appeal turns on whether there's any evidence that the three named plaintiffs, Brown, Diaz, and Welling, were employees of Sears. Now, I just heard counsel say that their specific jobs and responsibilities are not of record. I don't know how it could be determined that they were employees of Sears. We move for summary judgment.
Well, wait a minute. Mr. Schrader, I want to suggest to you that it strikes me that this case is about one of the oldest syllogisms there is. Namely, if indeed the plaintiffs believe that all Diamond employees are also employees of Sears, and then they prove that these people are Diamond employees, then it follows by the classic syllogistic reasoning that these employees are also employees of Sears. If only some Diamond employees meet the control tests and the like, then it strikes me that we have extraordinarily little evidence about whether these particular people happen to fall within the group that are employees of Sears or the group that are not employees of Sears. But I understood your opponent to say that he's in fact willing, as Judge Rover put it, to go on an all or nothing basis.
I still think that you need evidence as to the specific plans.
I mean, you know, if all people at Mayor Brown are employees of Mayor Brown, then it's enough, and it were relevant to a particular case to know whether you were an employee of Mayor Brown, it'd be enough to show you worked there.
One reason why the syllogism doesn't work here, Your Honor, let me just give an example. There was evidence in the depositions of Birchfield and Whitmire, the two witnesses the plaintiffs offered, that there were lots of Diamond employees, for example, human resources, secretarial, janitor staff, all sorts of people about whom, if you can look through the record high and low, there's no evidence that Sears ever had any contact with them at all. To those people, and we have no idea if the plaintiff fills one of those positions or not, because they elected not to tell us. They didn't submit affidavits from the plaintiffs. Now,
right, I understand that, and I guess his only answer to that is this kind of captain of the ship sort of argument, that the people at the very top were Sears employees, ergo everyone else is.
Well, let me talk about the evidence that the plaintiffs offered on all Diamond employees. The evidence is undisputed that Diamond, not Sears, Diamond made all decisions on hiring Diamond employees, firing Diamond employees, transferring them from one position to another, promoting them, employee discipline, compensation decisions, how much they would get paid. Diamond signed their paychecks. They were drawn on a Diamond bank account.
Why is it that Sears had to sign off on the advertising that Diamond used to recruit new employees? If, as you say, Diamond had exclusive authority over its own employment decisions, why could Diamond not advertise in whatever way it wanted to?
Well, Diamond, if you look through some of the materials that are in the appendix, they used the Sears name and the Diamond name. And because the Sears name was used, Diamond would draft the advertising and other materials. Sears would approve it. It's very similar to what happens in a franchise situation, where franchisees may advertise on behalf of McDonald's. That doesn't mean that McDonald's is the employer of the franchisee's employees, which is what all of the Illinois cases have held, that the franchisor is not in control of the franchisee's business operations. The kind of things that the plaintiff points to, inspections, audits a couple of times a year at various Diamond offices, Sears approval of forms that have been drafted by Diamond, all of that is very similar to what happens in the franchise situation. The same provisions are in all franchise agreements, and the Illinois cases have held uniformly that does not mean that the franchisor is in control of the franchisee's business operations, and they've reached that conclusion as a matter of law. The same thing applies here. Now,
I assume Diamond has no other client that it's serving.
At the time, Diamond did not have any other client, although it could have, because the license agreement applied only to non-commercial customers. So Diamond had the option of doing other business. It chose not to do that. But the fact that Diamond was had Sears as its only customer, doesn't somehow transform Sears into the employer of Diamond's employees. Again, that's come up in the Illinois cases, and the Illinois courts have said that is not enough to make the franchisor be in control of the business operations of the franchisee. That's come up in several of the Illinois cases, and we've cited those cases in our brief.
Well, as far as other work, for instance, it's Diamond rather abruptly ceased its business. So somebody left in the lurch, or does Sears have other such contractors who could step in and take over what Diamond, in effect, abandoned?
Well, Sears made sure that the particular jobs that were unfinished at the time Diamond went out of business, that those were finished.
Finished by what? Sears employees?
Yes.
Or another contractor?
Sears, that's not in the record, I believe, Your Honor, but I think what Sears did was either hire other contractors or somehow hired employees of its own to go out and do the work, to finish the work that was still in the process of being done.
Does Sears do this with other products and services, have different contractors doing things? I know they have lots of different products that they sell and service. For example, I don't know what, washing machines and treadmills and various and sundry things. Are those Sears employees, or do they have other Diamond type of franchise?
Your Honor, I honestly don't know the answer to that. I honestly don't know the answer to that question. One of the things the counsel mentioned was that the practical reality was that Sears would tell Diamond who to fire. Well, we asked Birchfield and Whitmire in their deposition, tell us every instance you can recall in which Sears ever recommended hiring or firing somebody. And between the two of them, over the 7 years of Diamond's existence, and Diamond had thousands of employees during this time. It operated in 44 states. They could come up with only 5 instances in which Sears ever recommended firing someone and 4 times when Sears recommended hiring someone. That's it. And they also testified that Diamond did not always follow Sears' recommendations. That, in fact, out of the 5 people who Sears recommended be terminated, Diamond decided to keep 3 of them. They even promoted one of them, and those 3 were still working for Diamond when Diamond went out of business. And Birchfield and Whitmire also agreed that Sears was only making recommendations, that the final decision maker was Diamond. Diamond was the one making actual decisions on these things. I think that the best evidence that, or maybe the most striking evidence that Sears did not control the daily work activities of Diamond's employees came from Birchfield's deposition. He said Sears, quote, didn't want to get into the details. They just wanted the results, and that's all they were after was the results. And then later on he went to say Sears, quote, did not tell you should do this to the roof or do that to the roof.
Well, of course, that's evidence on one side. I mean, the question before us right now is whether there's also enough evidence on the other side to justify a trial. And the degree to which Sears, under its quality everyday program or whatever, is micromanaging Diamond's work, right?
Well, the quality control surveys that Sears would do all occurred after the fact.
These surveys would be given
to customers.
I'm talking about the requirements, you know, about how many times you can let the phone ring before you answer it, and what you wear to work, and what you explain, and what you do to inform the customer and so forth. I mean, just how you do the job.
Those things, Your Honor, I submit, are no different than what happens with it in a typical franchise situation. You know, McDonald's people wear the same uniforms. The person at the counter, you know, wherever you walk into McDonald's, will say, you know, hello, welcome to McDonald's. You know, may I take your order, please? But that doesn't mean that McDonald's is controlling the employees of the franchisee. I mean, what the plaintiffs don't have is any evidence of Sears telling people on a day-to-day basis. There's no evidence that Sears ever called up somebody in Diamond's Dallas office and said, this morning I want you to go fix the roof at such and such an address, and this is how I want you to do it. And then when you get done with that, there's a fence that needs to be installed over at this other address, and this is how I want you to do that. There's no evidence that Sears ever called an accountant in Diamond's San Diego office to say, this morning I'd like you to pay these 6 bills and make sure that you get that done. Those are the kind of detailed instructions that employers give. And there's no evidence that Sears ever did any of that. All of those kinds of decisions and instructions on, you know, what places to go to, what to do, all of that, the evidence is undisputed, was done by Diamond and not by Sears.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Schwarzewski.
In answer to your question about what happened to these jobs afterwards, Mr. Birchfield's affidavit does address that Sears completed these jobs and Sears received the compensation for all the jobs, the work that was done by these employees on which this suit is now being brought. As to the specific issues of detail.
Well, why did Mr. Birchfield know about Sears' internal mechanism of arranging these things? Had he become a Sears employee by that time?
Well, Mr. Birchfield had been a Sears employee before. He was not a Sears employee. Well,
right.
Okay, I think he may have done some consulting for them afterwards, Your Honor. I don't think any issue was raised as to whether he had knowledge of that fact. As to the details, I would simply, and what is not contested, I would simply invite the court's attention specifically to paragraphs 28 on page 8 of the affidavit of Mr. Birchfield, where he explains about the telephone conversations and the details where these were addressed with Sears corporate representatives on a regular basis. I would also finally invite the court to pay close attention to the final paragraphs of the affidavits of both Mr. Birchfield and Mr. Whitmire, who explain, having worked for Sears for many years and having worked for Diamond with Sears' involvement in Diamond's operation, their observation was that as to themselves and as to virtually every other employee, their observation was that the control was greater, not less. And the facts on which those observations were based are laid out in those affidavits and provide sufficient facts to warrant a jury trial on the issue of employment.
Thanks very much. That's